Well, if you guys are just joining us, we are in part three of our new series called Bad Advice. And I want to go ahead and let you guys know right now, we are starting a new series here in 2 weeks called Monsters of the Heart. And I want you guys to go ahead and start thinking about this and inviting people to this little Halloween thing. We're going to be talking about monsters of the heart, monsters like jealousy, anger, greed. So we're going to be talking about that in the next couple weeks, but we're starting to wrap up our series called Bad Advice, and I'm literally giving some very, very bad advice. If you've seen any of my videos on Facebook or anything, you've thought, what in the world is he doing? My sister even called me last night and said, what's going on? Because what we're doing is we're literally sharing bad advice, and you're going, well, you know, I didn't come to church for bad advice. I came to church for good advice. Well, here's the thing. It seems like so many times we actually listen to bad advice better than we do good advice. And so we're sharing bad advice in order to hope that you hear the absurdity of this and actually do the exact opposite. And I promise, I will share some godly advice by the end of it. But here's some more bad advice. If you've missed any of this series and you want to get caught up or you want to know what's going on, we have all of our sermons on video on our website. It's attached to a Vimeo account. And then we also have a podcast that you can go and subscribe to. So here's some bad advice. Don't go do that. Okay? Don't go subscribe to our podcast. Don't give it a review and share it with your friends because it might be contagious and they might share it as well. Okay? And I even started something new last week. I'm doing a 90 seconds or less wrap up. So if you ever don't have time for that, you can also go to our Anchored Hope Facebook page and I sum up last week's sermon in 90 seconds or less. Some of you wish I did that on stage, actually, that I could just do the sermon in 90 seconds or less and we could all go to lunch. But good luck. It's not going to happen. But we're in part three of our series, and I want to start by asking you guys a question. How many of you are, I want you to raise your hand, how many of you are married, would like to be married one day, or would hope to, let's start there, married or hope to be married one day, raise your hand. Okay, I'm going to wait, I'm going to give you some time to think about it, okay? Married or would like to be married one day, even the children, teens, this is an important question, okay? Married or hope to be married one day. Keep those hands high, okay? Now, how many of you plan on committing adultery one day? Keep your hands high. The kids were confused. The kids turned to their mom like, what is he talking about? All right? No, so everybody's hands got down. Why? Because none of you, that's good. I mean, I'm glad none of you were honest, you know, or anything like that. And we're like, yeah, maybe. No, none of you plan to commit adultery one day, right? None of you plan to cheat on your spouse and to do that with somebody else. Now, that's a good thing, but yet so many people today still do it, right? Again, we talked about this last week. We talked about addictions. Nobody plans to screw up their life. The problem is that they just don't plan not to. Well, here's the thing. Nobody plans to cheat on their spouse. Nobody plans to commit adultery, yet it happens all the time. So what is that? What is it? I mean, clearly, we disagree with it. Even if you look at the secular world, there have been studies after studies after studies. One of them I read this week said that 90% of people, and again, this was not a Christian survey, 90% of people agree that adultery is wrong. So right off the bat, 90% of the world agrees that Exodus, the Ten Commandments, where God said, thou shalt not commit adultery. Everybody agrees with it. It's kind of a universal law that we're all okay with. Yet so many people still do it. There was an article I read this week in the Journal of Psychology and Christianity, and it said some amazing statistics that up to 65% of husbands and 55% of wives will commit adultery. Wow. Those are some huge numbers. 65% of men, that's more than half. 55% of women, that's still more than half, will commit adultery at some point in their marriage. Now, nobody look at your spouse with an evil eye, okay? Like, 65%, that could be you, you know? No, that's not my intention today. But it's a staggering number that we have to address. So what is it that's going on? Well, today we're going to talk about this very, very massive problem. And I hate to talk about this because it's just, it can be painful for some of you. Some of you, this might bring up something from your past, might be bring up something going on in your marriage right now. And I have to give you a disclaimer because my wife, who's much wiser than I told you I should give you this disclaimer, my wife said, you need to like say right now that you've had this sermon done for months. So if anybody feels like you're talking directly to them or their relationship, then you know they need to understand you already wrote this. So here's the thing, if you feel convicted at any point and you think, he's talking about me, I'm not talking about you, okay? This is just God's timing, so take it up with him later, okay? But we do need to address this issue of adultery and cheating and lust because it's a huge, huge problem. So here's what's going to happen. I'm gonna give you some bad advice on how to commit adultery, and I hope you hear the absurdity of it. But for a second, let's pause and let's think about how this happens, okay? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about how do people find themselves in these predicaments and in these situations where they end up cheating on their spouse or lusting after another man or another woman and they end up committing adultery? Well, it's really not that hard, and actually it's the same story every single time. See, what happens is, and teenagers, take note of this, okay? They're just going to tell you the story of life right now, is you meet somebody and you feel that spark, right? You feel that pizzazz, and you feel in love, okay? When you first meet somebody, you don't get to see them all the time. There's still some mystique. There's still some, you know, mystery there. And so it's easy to feel that spark, and it's easy to feel excited when you see each other, and you get to spend time, and you spend hours on the phone, and you're getting to know each other, and everything is new. And that's that spark, and that's that feeling of love. And if you keep that long enough and you want more, then what happens is you give yourself to that person, you make promises, and you get married, and that love, that feeling of love there and that spark is very easy to have. It's very easy to have. It is not hard to fall in love and to feel love. But then what happens is that things change over time, right? You know, the honeymoon phase ends. You start to have a routine in life, and it's go to work and come home, and then you add kids to the mix, right? And you grow your family, and then it gets even harder because there's more balance to have. There's more to manage. There's more people to share your love with, and there's, you know, little ones that need your attention. And then life gets to be even more routine, and you get more exhausted, and you start to fill up your schedule with different things, and all of a sudden that feeling of love starts to kind of damper, right? And it's more about being in love, but that feeling isn't exactly there, and that spark isn't there like it used to be, and it begins to fade over time. And then one day at work, on the ball field, while you're on Facebook, somebody pops up. Somebody walks in the room. Somebody comes to your desk. And all of a sudden, you're intrigued like you were back when you were young. They're attractive. They look a little different than your current spouse or the current person that you're with, you know? Maybe different color hair, brighter eyes, skinnier waist, bigger breasts, bigger muscles. And now all of a sudden you're intrigued, and there's a little bit of difference in them to what you have currently. You know, they laugh at your jokes, and your spouse, they haven't laughed at your jokes in years. They have an interest in something that you have an interest in, that your spouse has given up interest on. They used to because they, you know, when you were dating, they're like, yeah, I love cars too. Oh, I love Pinterest, honey. Yes, I would do that with you all the time. Zumba, I'm in, right? But now, thing, you've gotten more truthful. You've torn down the facade, and so now it's very clear, but somebody else is showing you interest. And so what happens is you start to form a relationship with the person. But it's just a friendship, right? It's just somebody that helps you out. It's just somebody that you enjoy to spend time with. It's you know, nothing wrong with it at all, right? It's completely innocent. But then as you start to get closer and closer and closer, you start to share different fears that you have, things that bring you anxiety. You start to open up about your past, about your family. Maybe even start to open up about things going on with your kids or things that are even going on in your marriage. And the other person, they show interest and they tell you that they agree with you and they see your side of it and they comfort you and they're there for you. And now things are becoming very, very interesting because this person goes from being a friend or a coworker or someone that you just occasionally see to someone who is a confidant, to someone that you are growing to really, really like. And then it even gets to the point where you get excited about seeing them. You anticipate it. You think to yourself, I wonder if they'd like this shirt. I wonder what time they're going to go by, you know, the coffee shop. I wonder if I showed up at this time, would we maybe run into each other or see each other? Or maybe they would like to go to lunch together on Friday and we can discuss this a little bit more. Or maybe after work we could go and we could go to the bar, or we could go have a cup of coffee, or we could maybe go to drink. Just to talk about work, just as friends. It's nothing wrong with it. Nothing serious. Nothing's going to happen. It's in a public place. But you begin to come closer and closer and closer, and then one day, for some reason, you brush up against each other, or your hands touch, or you get really, really close, and all of a sudden, there's this overwhelming feeling that comes over you, and it's a spark again. It's the same spark you felt when you were young. It's that same spark that interests you and your spouse a long time ago, but you haven't felt that spark with your spouse in a very long time. Now you feel it with this person, and now your mind starts to wonder, what if? What if we kissed? What if we touched? I wonder what they look like with their clothes off. I wonder what it would be like to be with them. I wonder, I wonder, I wonder. And our mind begins to create this fantasy of what ifs. And then one day we wake up, and what we finally realize is that we have drifted so far away from our spouse, from the person we are married to, that sometimes we wake up and we have done something that is irreversible. Sometimes we wake up and we have learned that we have totally forgotten our spouse and we have totally neglected them so much that we aren't in love with them anymore. And now we can't get away from this fantasy that we've created in our mind. Man, it's awful. And so this morning, here's what I want to do. I want to give you some really, really, really bad advice on how to commit adultery. And I want you to hear the absurdity in this, but I'm going to talk as if I believe in it wholeheartedly. And so I'm just going to kind of put on a mask for a little bit and talk about this a little bit differently. So here's the thing. If you wake up one day and you decide, you know what? I've got such a great marriage, and I am ready to just screw it up. I am ready to just put my kids in just an awful predicament. I am ready to tear this house up, and I am ready to just go after this and see how badly I can screw this thing up. Well, here is some bad advice on how to commit adultery, okay? So thing number one you're going to want to do, you want to neglect your marriage, okay? Neglect your marriage. Don't go on date nights. You're too busy for that. It's too expensive of an investment to make into your marriage. So do not go on date nights, okay? Date nights are overrated, all right? You can spend the same amount of time together and less money just by, you know, sitting on the couch together, watching Netflix and, you know, twiddling around on your phone and not talking to each other for 3 hours, right? So that time is just as good and as valuable as going out without the kids and sitting at a table without any technology in front of you and having a face-to-face conversation with each other, okay? Don't do that. Don't go on date nights, okay? And here's the other thing, okay? Kids, earmuffs, stop having sex, okay? Don't do that. Don't do that. Do not do that with your spouse, okay? Just stop doing that. It's the same every time, all right? He falls asleep. It makes you awake. It's boring. It's disgusting, okay? So just don't do it anymore. You don't need to do that anymore. Just forget that part of your marriage and just cut that out, okay? And then most definitely, do not go to church together. Just stop going to church together, okay? Start doing more activities like this is my activity and this is their activity. Do separate things apart as much as possible. Don't pray together. Don't ask each other how they're doing. Don't read the Bible together. Don't go to church together. Just cut all of those things out and completely neglect your spouse and your marriage, okay? That is thing number one I want to make sure that you do. Less quality time, okay? And then the second thing I want you to do is I want you to find somebody who you can enjoy common interests with and form an emotional bond with, okay? Find somebody else who you can start to bond with and get very, very, very close with, okay? Maybe somebody at work. Maybe somebody from an activity that your kid has, okay? Maybe somebody even, here's a great one, right? Find somebody from your college days or your high school days on Facebook. Look up old flings or look up old people that were attractive, you know, back in the day, and just peek and see how they're doing, right? Just peek and see if they, you know, they still look as good as they did, or, you know, maybe they even live close, you know, maybe they never moved away like you never moved away, and maybe they're within reach, and maybe they're up for getting a coffee or something, you know, maybe just message them and see how they're doing, and maybe some of those old sparks will fling back up, or maybe they're going through, you know, a season of life, kind of like how you're going through a season of life. And so try to find that person and form an emotional bond with them. And then begin to tell them things that are none of their business, okay? Like things that are completely none of their business. Tell them things that are going on in the bedroom. Tell them things that are going on with your spouse. Tell them about that nasty mole that they have that you've been trying to get them to get rid of, right? And just start to tell them things that are none of their business. And tell them as much information as you can, okay? And here's what's going to happen. Because, you know, obviously they agreed to go out with you and you guys are together. Here's the thing. They're as lonely and sad as you are. And so the great thing is that they are going to agree with everything that comes out of your mouth. Okay? Because they're lonely and sad too. Like, whatever you say, even if you are wrong, okay? They're going to go, yes, I agree with you. I am on your side. I would have done the same thing and I would feel the same way, okay? It's awesome. They're really going to feel like you're knight in shining armor, okay? I mean, they're going to be like, yes, finally, somebody's on Team Michael, right? Awesome. This is so good. And that's going to just make that emotional bond even closer and better. And then just find things to do together, right? You need to find ways to be with that person. So, you know, do a project at work together, you know. Go out to lunch or coffee with one another. You know, whenever your kids are at the ball field at the same time, you know, go and sit with them on the bench and just use that time to talk with one another and share life with one another and tell them things that are none of their business and really work on forming that emotional bond, right? And then, you know, what I want you to do is I want you to begin to rationalize it all, you know. I want you to start to think about how that person laughs at your jokes and agrees with you and says that you're right and has interest in your interest. And then even start to think about what it would be like to be with that person. Think about maybe you missed out. Maybe this is really the love of your life, the person you were always meant to be. Maybe fate. This is fate. And this is what's supposed to be, and that first and second train that you jumped on, those were the wrong trains. This was the train you were always meant to have, and just began to fantasize about what that might look like, okay? And so as you do that, and as you, you know, form that relational bond, the last thing I want you to do is I want you to make excuses and rationalize your actions. Now, here's the thing. You're going to want to hide this from everybody, okay? Hide this from your spouse. You know, delete your messages, hide your texts. You know, if they come by, make sure you hold your phone close to the chest, you know what I mean, while you're over there on the couch, you know, and look at it, you know, but make sure that, you know, they can't look at your Facebook messages or any of that or see what you're seeing. Keep all that stuff very, very private. But if you ever do get caught, or if you ever decide, you know what, I've decided what I want, I'm going to come out about who I want to be with and what I want and what I'm feeling, rationalize it. And the best way you can rationalize it is blame your spouse, okay? It's not your fault, even though these were your choices that you made, but it's their fault, okay? And convince them that it's their fault. I mean, if my spouse were just meeting my needs, if he would pay some attention to me, and then if I wouldn't have to put up with this kind of stuff, it would be different. And so put it on them, because really it's their fault. It's not yours. They just haven't been meeting your needs, okay? It makes complete sense that after they have worked a hard day and done so much and paid bills and fixed the roof and done all this stuff, that they should just grovel at your feet every single day and every single night and meet your needs, okay? So it makes perfectly sense, and you need to rationalize that. And look, tell yourself, you deserve to be happy. I mean, right? Don't we all agree with that? You deserve to be happy. Your happiness is most important. I mean, if you're not going to take care of you, who is? And doesn't God want you to be happy, right? I mean, you work hard, and you do so much. You just want a little attention. You just want a little love. You need that. And so all of this really, it makes sense. It's nothing wrong with what you're doing. And so you need to put that deep inside your head and begin to understand and rationalize and get these excuses ready, because people are going to come at you and they're going to tell you that you're wrong or that you're uncommitted. Look, that's a bunch of garbage, okay? You're going to find out who your real friends are in just a minute. And you just need to cling on to what you want and what gratifies your desires. Now, that's some bad advice, right? That's stupid on steroids is what that is, okay? And although I'm being completely sarcastic and it may be a little bit funny to some of you, to others of you, you're not laughing right now, because this is exactly what has happened to you before in your life. In a past marriage, this is what happened. To you right now, this is what is happening. To a friend that you were very close to, this is what happened. In your parents' marriage, this is exactly what happened. And you've heard these rationalizations before. You've seen this pattern before. Like I said, it's the same story every single time. It's not very different. Just different people with different names. And it's sad. It's sad that so many people fall into this trap of this bad advice. And they end up committing adultery. And here's the thing. The world that we live in today, thinks that this is actually okay advice. If we went around to most of our friends and talked to people and took a poll, most people agree that you do. You deserve to be happy and you need to get yours. And that, you know what? Marriage is not a covenant bond between you and God. It's simply a contract that is simple to get out of with a visit to a lawyer. And that it's not that big a deal. That this happens all the time and that the kids will be okay. But the truth and the honest fact of the matter is that it's not as simple as the world and as even many counselors make it out to be. It's a serious thing with a lot of ramifications. Because here's the thing, while you're out trying to figure out what makes you happy and what's going to complete you in life, you put a whole lot of people on hold. And their life is left in limbo while you try to figure out what you want. And while you're out figuring out what you want and they're left in limbo, they're trying to wonder what they're going to do, how they're going to make it, what their life is going to look like, and if they have just invested the last many years of marriage for no reason. And so they're left in limbo. And then the worst part of it is we leave kids scarred, blaming themselves, completely displaced and completely unbalanced, setting them up for a future that they're probably going to repeat themselves. There are many ramifications of this bad advice. So here's the thing. I'm going to give you some good advice. Some good advice to counter this bad advice. And I want you to throw that bad advice out the window, out the door. And here is some godly advice that is going to help you to fight for your marriage, to keep your marriage whole, and to stay away from the trap of committing adultery. So here's the thing. I'm going to give you three things to do, and I want you to do whatever it takes to do this. And the first thing is this. Do whatever it takes to radically reduce the risk, okay? Do whatever it takes to radically reduce the risk. You know, there's something interesting about the Bible when it comes to different sins and different things that Jesus talks about, is that other sins, it talks about fighting or resisting, kind of trying to take control of it. But when it comes to lust and sexual sin, do you know what God says again and again and again? God says, run from it. Do not fight it. Do not resist it. Do not resist it. Do not try to control it. Don't try to put up a good struggle with it. It says, run the other way. Why? Because sexual sin is the sin that you will never win. You will not be able to tame it. You will not be able to control it. It will always win. Teenagers, let me talk to you for a second, point blank for a minute. Do not put yourself in a situation where you will be able to resist. You won't, okay? Because you're a boy and you're a girl and your hormones are high, and in a split second, your mind will turn to mush and you will not be able to think clearly, okay? Flee from it. Run from it, because you will not win the fight. And adults, the same thing. And most of you already know this. You won't win the fight. Proverbs, this awesome dad, dad take notes, this awesome dad gives this advice to his son, and he says this to him in Proverbs 5:8. He says, keep to a path far, far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. So clearly there is this girl who is tempting his son. And he says, son, listen to me, pay attention. Don't even go near the door. Don't talk to her anymore. Stay clear from her. Get out of that work project. Don't go to lunch with her any longer, okay? Stop going and sitting with her on the bleachers. Stop Facebooking each other. Stop Snapchatting each other. Stop tweeting one another. This is going to go badly. Flee from this temptation. Stay away from it as far as you can, because you've got to radically reduce the risk. So you need to create this buffer between yourself and that sin. This is why Jesus says in Matthew 5:28, when he talked about this, and he talked about this so often, he said, but I say, anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Now, why did he say this? Because the law said, don't commit adultery. And so many people said, oh, the law says, don't commit adultery. So I'm good up until the point I have sex with the person. And Jesus says, no, you need to understand. Too many of you guys are getting too close to that line. I don't even want you to get to that line. Because once you get to that line, you've already gone too far and you're going to go through with it. I want you to think about five lines back. I don't want you to even look at a person lustfully. And I want you to understand that when you even look at a person lustfully, when you start to create this reality that is not true in your mind, when you begin to create this fantasy, I want you to know that you are at the ledge right there, and it's going to take one step, and you're going to tumble down. So don't even look at somebody lustfully, because otherwise it's going to set you up from failure, and it's going to tumble all the way down. So don't even look at anybody lustfully. We've got to radically reduce the risk of falling in this trap. So we've got to create a buffer between us and this risk. So look, here's the thing. Do whatever you have to. Guys, these little awesome gadgets, these little computers in our hands, these are dangerous for some of us. There's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing sinful with having one of these devices. But here's the thing. For some of us, it's very, very dangerous. Because there are websites and there are apps and there are things that are accessible to us that for some of us, it is a rabbit hole. And so, hey, you know what? Maybe you don't need a smartphone, okay? Nobody says you have to have one of these. Get a flip phone. Start to write letters. I don't know. You know what I mean? Whatever you have to do, do it to radically reduce the risk. I had somebody ask me one time, Pastor, are you telling me, I've got this girl at work and this thing going on, are you telling me I need to quit my job? And I told him, I said, you tell me, do you need to quit your job? Can you avoid her? Can you stop thinking about her? Can you stop going to her desk and talking to her? He said, I don't think I can. Well, then yes, then you might need to actually quit your job. And he said, I can't believe you would advise me to do that. And I said, well, it's either quit your job and keep your marriage or keep your job and potentially end up making a mistake with this woman. You tell me what's more important to you. It's your life. Whatever you have to do, do. Jesus says, if you need to gouge your eye out, do it. Some people ask me, do you think Jesus is being literal? For some people, yes, probably. Some people probably do need to gouge their eye out and chop off their hand because that is the only thing that's going to stop them from committing this sin. So yes, I don't know. Whatever you have to do, do it. To radically reduce the sin. Keep growing in your relationship with Christ. Never be in the wrong place with the wrong person. Keep your marriage issues inside your marriage or with a trained professional, okay? Don't shout it out on social media or Facebook. Nobody needs to know it. Don't share it with the friend at work who's going to agree with everything you say. You know, keep that stuff to yourself. And then avoid all inappropriate places and situations. And then the second thing I want you to do is this. I want you to invest passionately in your marriage. Invest passionately in your marriage. Proverbs 5:18-20 says this. Let your wife be a fountain of blessing for you. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. She is a loving deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you always. May you always be captivated by her love. Why be captivated, my son, by an immoral woman or fondle the breast of a promiscuous woman? First time I've ever read that verse in a sermon, right? Never forget when I was 12, my dad set me down and read this verse to me. No, that didn't happen. First time I've said fondle in a sermon, too. Anyway, where was I? Squirrel. The father is saying to the son, here's what the father is saying to the son. Son, let your wife be the joy of your life. Let your wife be the thing that brings you pleasure. God has given you a mate. He has blessed you with her. Why do you need anything else? Why do you need to go anywhere else? You have a wife and you have this. So invest in her. Pour yourself into her. Let her be the thing that you are captivated by. It's not like you don't have anybody. You do have somebody. You're just not taking care of the thing that has been given to you. So don't go looking for something else that is promiscuous and will not last. Invest and pour yourself into the thing that God has given you and that is right and that is righteous. Pour into her. The Hebrew word there that captivated, the Hebrew word there is shakah. Everybody say it. You got to say it with some attitude. Shakah. Shakah, come on, you got to give me a little more. Ready? Shakah, okay? That Hebrew word captivated is shakah, okay? And what the father is saying is you've got to have that shakah in your marriage, all right? That Hebrew word means enraptured, ravished, consumed by. Literally, as an adjective, the picture that they would see when they would use this word, it's a picture of a larger animal taking over a smaller animal, like in a hunt. And he's saying we ought to have that in our marriages, in our relationships with people that we love and we've dedicated our life to. Is that we should have this feeling of I'm just enraptured by you. I'm captivated by you. It's just like when you walk into a room, it just, wow, man, it just takes me over. It's like you're a lion and it's just, man, it's just, I just want you to like devour me, man. Like that's how in love with you I am. Like it's crazy how I feel whenever you walk in the room. It's just that wow, it's that spark, it's that pizzazz. But here's what the father's saying. It's easy to have that little teenage immature spark of that feeling in love at the beginning. But as you develop and as you grow and as you mature, it turns into something much more. It turns into that shaka. And here's the thing. If you've lost the shaka, the answer to the problem is not to go look for more shaka. The problem is that you don't know how to take care of the shaka that you've been given. So don't go looking for more shaka, because if you don't know how to take care of shaka, it's just going to lose shaka. Invest and take care of the shaka that you have now. Anybody else need me to say shaka one more time? I'll put it in layman's terms for you, okay? Here's what the father would say. If the grass looks greener on the other side, just water your own grass. If the grass looks greener on the other side, just water your own grass. Because here's the fact of the matter, son. If you go over there thinking, well, the grass is greener over here, here's what you're an expert at, killing grass. And you're just going to kill that grass too. So don't go looking for greener grass and greener pastures. Take care of the grass you've been given now. Because you were given to it, and you're just a bad steward of what you've been given. So don't go looking for greener grass. Water the grass you've been given to get that shaka. Do what you need to do. Go on date nights. Please, for the love of Pete, I'll pastor right now. I will babysit your children, okay? Do whatever you have to. Go out on date nights. Be alone with each other. Put your phones away. Talk to one another like you used to do, all right? Go to church with one another. Spend time with other couples who have good relationships. Guess what? If all you do is hang out with other couples that fight or have bad relationships or talking about cheating on one another or talking about other people they're attracted to, guess what? It's going to just poison your well as well. So stay with couples that are strong. Spend time with other relationships that are godly and that look like what you want yours to look like. Guys, we talked about this summer, but I'm going to say it again. As your pastor, I'm telling you this as a command. Get naked, all right? Seriously, get naked with one another. I don't care what you have to do. Go home if you have to right after service and say, Pastor told us to, we have to. Because seriously, it is a thing, guys, and it's something that God commanded us to do in our marriage. It's not silly, and it's not immature. It is a solution to a very big problem sometimes, and so yes, you need to do that.
And you need to explain to your kids that it's an okay thing to do in the right context and committed to the right person. It's not a bad thing. If all we do is keep telling our kids and people that this is wrong, always ignore this, just this is a bad, bad thing. It's not. It's a God-invented activity for married people to do. And he tells us to do it often. So we ought to do it because it's good for our marriage and it creates the shekah, all right? I'm going to add action. Shekah! That is what creates that feeling of love, is time together and investing one another and being together physically, emotionally. That's what we need to do with one another. And the last thing I want you to do is this. I want you to visualize the potential destruction. When you're in these situations, all you're thinking about, we'll call it, you're thinking with your gut, all right? You're thinking with your gut. But I want you to stop yourself, and I want you to visualize the potential destruction of what you are doing. I want you to close your eyes. If you want to do it right now, you can. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to sit. I want you to think about sitting down. Sitting down, and all of a sudden trying to figure out how you are going to live and afford, because now you can't live in a house together. Now you're going to get divorced. And so now you've screwed this up, and now you're going to get divorced, and now you've got to find a place to live, but your paycheck is only X amount, and so now you can't afford to have a house. You can barely afford rent in an apartment, and so now where are you going to live? This is a factor because of decisions you've made. So now you got to go live somewhere. You're going to go live with him or her? Okay. Good luck. Imagine for a minute sitting down with your kids and explaining to them, son, daughter, guys, daddy, mommy, they're not going to be able to live here anymore. You guys are only going to see me every other weekend or every other week. And we're not going to be able to be there for each other anymore. And think about for a minute every other Christmas being alone by yourself, every other holiday, every other Halloween, every other Thanksgiving, waking up by yourself on Christmas morning because your kids are with their other family because you decided you didn't want this family anymore. Just visualize all the things that are going to change because you saw some greener grass. Because you couldn't invest in your own marriage and take care of it. Just visualize the destruction and all the things that might happen. And here's some truth, because some of you need a little bit more of a whack in the head, okay? Here's some real truth, because you might seriously be thinking that this person is the person that you are supposed to spend the rest of your life with, that this is fate, that you have chosen the wrong people in the past, and this is Mr. Right, and or this is Mrs. Right, and this is the person you're supposed to be with. Well, let me just drop some science on you, okay? This isn't biblical. This isn't Pastor Mike talking here. Let me give you some stats, okay? 3% of couples who commit adultery actually get married. 3%. If you go and say, well, this is the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with, well, 3% of those relationships actually end up getting married. Do you know how many of that 3% end up getting divorced? 75% of them. 75% of those relationships ending up getting divorced. Do you know what that means? You have a 0.07 chance, less than 1% chance of actually having a good, happy ever after with this person who you think is Mr. Fate, Mrs. Right. Less than 1% chance of actually being with this person and being happy. Why? What is that? But I felt the spark, but it was so magical. It's because everything that you were doing was built around sin and lies and deceit, and that is why it was fun, because sin is fun. But sin doesn't last. So it's not realistic. There is no happily ever after here. That fantasy that you've created in your head is just that. It's a lie from Satan because he wants to see you screw up your life. He wants to see your kids displaced. He wants to mess up your spouse. That's his goal. That's his mission. This is what he loves. We can't listen to that deceit, to those lies anymore. Now, here's the thing. Every single one of us in this room probably have a little bit different grasp and context on everything that I've just shared. And for some of you, this is going on right now. Some of you are committing adultery. And some of you are committing physical adultery, and some of you are already committing adultery in your mind. And though you haven't put words to what's going on right now, let me understand, you could commit adultery emotionally without being physical. And some of you are already on track to committing adultery. Some of you, your spouse is committing adultery against you. You've found out about it. Some of you haven't. Others of you, this is what happened 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Or this is what happened to your parents. This is what's happening with a friend right now. And it's very, very hard, and it's very, very emotional. And it can be very, very scarring. And I'll be honest with you, like, as I was going through this sermon, again, I could only work on it like 30 minutes at a time before shutting my laptop because I was just so, ugh. So if I come off as passionate, it's because I am, because this is a serious problem. And because I'm tired of seeing specifically children displaced and left out of balance and blaming themselves and repeating what their parents repeated because of our ignorant mistakes, because of our decisions that are destructive and painful. And I hear about it in the schools all the time, and I hear about it from the counselors. And it's just such a scary, scary thing that we don't flee from enough, that we try to say, I got a handle on it, or I can keep it secret, or it's not that big a deal. But it so is. It's a huge, huge bomb just waiting to go off. And so here's the thing for some of you today. For some of you, what you need to do is you need to confess this morning. You need to confess, and you need to let it be known right now that this is wrong and that you need to get this out in the open. And here's the thing I'll tell you right now. You probably need to come talk to me about it before you talk to your spouse. That's just a word of advice that somebody gave me one time and that I've wrestled with for many years. But here's the thing. You need to come talk to me before you go talk to your spouse, because you need to confess this and get this right with God, because you are going to hurt that person so bad when you go tell them. You're going to hurt them so, so bad. And this is something that you cannot do alone. But you do need to confess it, and you do need to get it out there, and you need to seek forgiveness from God. And here's the thing. That's a great thing about Jesus. Jesus gave that to us. Timothy says that when we are unfaithful, he is what? Faithful. And so if you've been unfaithful, look, it's okay. It's not irreversible. I've seen so many people come back from this stuff and so much worse. I've seen so many situations and I've been with people through it. But here's the thing. It takes a village, it takes help, and it takes complete transparency and honesty. And maybe that's what you need to do today. Or maybe you're close to that ledge and you need to put a stop to it right now. Maybe what you need is another man or another woman in this church to be your accountability partner, because you are close to the edge and you are creating habits and patterns that are becoming very addictive, and you need somebody to help you shut this down now. And you need wisdom. It's okay. You're not meant to do life alone. That's why we're here with each other. Or you know what, too? Here's the thing. Man, adultery, when it comes to the Bible, It's a legitimate reason to get divorced. I would never look at somebody who has been victimized like that and say, I'm going to tell you, you're wrong for getting a divorce. The Bible says it's grounds for divorce. But here's the thing, too. It's also grounds for forgiveness. And for some of you, that's the story today, is that you have been left behind. You have been forgotten about. And in your past, somebody hurt you very, very badly. Or right now, somebody is hurting you very, very badly. While they make up their mind about who they want to be with and what life they'd like to have, you lost years of investment. You lost years of happiness. You lost years of joy. You were the one left taking care of the kids and keeping everything together. But you know what? I know that was painful and that was wrong what that person did. But maybe what you need today is you need to tell that person, or at least tell God, that you forgive them and let it go. And stop letting that be something that it poisons your future. Let it go, find redemption, find happiness, and get back on the path of finding somebody new who will treat you right. Maybe that's what you need. I don't know. Everybody's got a different context today. But I think every single one of us this morning, we need to come to God, and we need to deal with this issue of being unfaithful. And maybe what we need is we need to recommit ourselves to God and say, God, I have been unfaithful. I have strayed. I have neglected my marriage. I have rationalized these things in my head. And God, I want to be free of this. Or you know what? I want a new start. I want a fresh start. God is willing to give you that today. God wants nothing but the best for you and your family, for your marriage, for your kids. But here's the thing, it's not this magical, you know, fantasy that we created when we were a teenager. It takes work, it takes investment to get that shekah. And the only way to do it is by living a godly life, by being a godly husband, a godly man, a godly woman. When we walk in line with Him and we flee from temptation, it's the only way to truly get the happiness that we are looking for. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to invite Pastor Josh to come back up. Actually, I'm going to invite the whole band. I want the whole band to come back up. And we're going to worship together this morning. And as we've done throughout this entire series, we're going to worship this morning. And as we worship, I want you to think with God. I want you to seriously get honest with God, because here's the thing, God already knows, and I want you to just pour out your life to Him. And as we worship, maybe what you need to do is you need to run back to God this morning. You need to come back home. You need to get back centered and Him be the focus of your life. Because this is too big of a deal. This has got our kids on the line. This has got our spouse on the line. This is our marriage. This is our safety. This is our family. This is our home. This is everything we've worked for. This is even our career. I mean, everything can be destroyed by just a small decision in this arena. So let's focus ourselves back on God, and let's repent. And let's begin to build the marriages and the life that God truly wants us to have. Will you guys stand with me this morning? We're going to pray. We're going to pray and we're going to worship together. And then if anybody wants to pray with me, if anybody needs to confess or anybody needs help, I'm going to be down here. And look, I know we're not the most open church. Some of you guys keep things close to the chest. And you think, I am not going to scoot out of this aisle. There's like six other people that I'd have to say, excuse me. And basically, like, I might as well shoot a flare in the air to let everybody know something's wrong. Look, nobody's judging you in this room. Because here's the thing, nobody in this room is perfect, me included. Nobody in this room is like Jesus yet. And here's the thing, nobody in this room is going to think less of you for coming down and praying. We should celebrate and cheer on the people who are brave enough and man enough and honest enough to come out and say, I'm fighting for my marriage. I'm fighting for my kids. I'm fighting for my spouse. I praise the people who are bold enough and faithful enough to come down here and get right with God and do something about what we've just heard. If all this is information that goes in one ear and out the other, this was a wasted hour and a half. Don't leave here the same way as you came in. Walk out changed. Walk out renewed. And you will wake up different tomorrow than you woke up today. You will wake up feeling like you have a second chance on life. You will wake up with a new start to your marriage, with another opportunity to pour into your kids. You can change things by getting right with God today. And all it takes is a conversation. All it takes is a prayer. But it's your choice. So this morning, whether it be sitting in your seat with God, if you want to do it on your own, do it on your own. That's your decision. That's okay. But I'm available. And I'm telling you, you don't have to do it on your own. God, this morning, we come to you. And I pray for every single person in this room. God, I pray today that your Spirit would work on our hearts. I know, God, for some, this is a painful message. And I pray that maybe some of us who have been hurt, that perhaps today through this message, God, we could begin to soften our hearts and forgive that person who has hurt us. God, I pray for some of us today that we'd be willing to confess and open up our hearts to you. That God, you already know what we've been thinking, what we've been doing, what we've kind of been, this game we've been playing in our mind. God, will you help us to shut that down right now this morning? Will you forgive us as we confess our sin to you? And will you give us a new chance, a new opportunity to be renewed by you? God, will you strengthen us today and help us to run from the temptation of lust? That, God, we would not resist it or try to put up a fight or get a handle on it, that we would run from it. Whatever we need to do to radically reduce the risk, help us to do it. That's my prayer for every single one of us, because I want us to have great marriages. I don't want any of us to see us be destroyed or displaced. I want to see us be encouraged and built up and whole. Create our family trees. Create a blessing in them and help them be a lineage and generations of hope and wholeness and prosperity, God. That's what I want for every single one of our families. But God, that comes through the decisions we make. So help us, God, to be captivated by our spouses, to invest in that shekah. That's my prayer for our church this morning, Lord. As we worship, we open up our hearts to you, Lord. In your name we pray. Amen.